know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast, What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm already a multi-time world champion. I'm 20-1 with 16 finishes. I got more finishes and a better record than every single guy ranked right now. I'm already a multi-time world champion. That's beaten the who's who, very good names in MMA. I plan to win this fight, and I expect to be at the top of the division. Whether it's a title fight next, I don't know, but I don't mind what it is, as long as it's a step up. I plan to be successful against Mario Bautista and then move forward, you know. Hopefully the top five, top three. You know, I don't fear any man, so any of them are fine.
That's Patchy Mix. I'm going to talk a little fighting here and get some bills in as well. Our buddy Matt Perino joining us on the Western Hotline. Mr. Perino, always a pleasure to chat with you. You're the one I can reach out to and say, like, hey, let's talk bills. But also, Buffalo's got a fighter on the UFC scene, and, you know, you're the guy to talk to on that.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It's an exciting time. I mean, if you think about it, this is the most legitimate title contender since Rashad Evans. Yeah. And this has been years in the making. And, like, this isn't – to what he just said is exactly right. This isn't like a fighter on the come up getting his – opportunity at the UFC and starting from the bottom. This is one of the top fighters at his weight class that's coming over from Bellator, multiple time champion over there, has fought the who's who of guys over there, has beaten some UFC guys over there. I mean, Sergio Pettis, he submitted him in the second round, and he's coming in. I mean, he wants to put on a show against Batista, 316. He wins that. I don't know. It's tough because on the same card, Mirab Dvalishvili is fighting Sean O'Malley in a rematch at the top. Whoever wins that, if it ends up being O'Malley, sure, you could probably do Mix off of a really impressive performance, but there's Corey Sandhagen, there's Peter Yan out there who are probably in the mix maybe too. So maybe Mix, if he wins this one in impressive fashion, fights one of those two guys in like a title eliminator type of bout. But the sky's the limit. I mean, this has been years, years in the making. I remember Don Lilly, he coaches wrestling over at Sweet Home. When I was at the Tonawanda News back in 2012 and 2013, MMA was still, professional MMA wasn't legal in New York State yet. And so one of the biggest amateur outfits in in New York State was Victory MMA based in North Tonawanda. So I met Eric Herbert, who was kind of like the OG fighter back in the day before it became legal. Don Lilly was promoting shows there. And this was long before Patchy kind of came along. But I got to kind of meet a lot of those fighters. And when I was at the UFC, Don texted me and said, hey, man, I got this kid who is about to just take the world by storm. He wanted him to try out for the Ultimate Fighter way back in the day. However, it ended up happening. He didn't end up getting on the show. And he went the opposite route, which was like all of these secondary shows, working his way up. I mean, to put it in perspective, Jeremy, he's got 15 of his 20 career wins are by submission.
Yeah.
In the UFC, Charles Oliveira holds the record for 16 submission wins all time. So this is one of the most decorated fighters outside of the UFC coming for, you know, to prove to the world that he's what he's been outside the UFC or outside the UFC.
Matt Perino, we'll get to bills in a minute. So Matt, tell us a little bit, you know, you're starting there, the context of why Patchy Mix's name is coming out right now. You know, looking back on his fight history, he has one career loss, but I'm looking at King of the Cage. He's fighting in Salamanca. Like, he's fighting in Seneca Allegheny and making his way up from Angola and just dominant. So for people that don't really understand or don't know the structure of how you rise up from, you know, the lower levels to get to UFC, how do you take that road, and how has he maneuvered it to get to this point where, I mean, you've already said kind of like this isn't necessarily a big break, but this is a call up to the majors to a degree, or signing with the premier card?
he was in the majors, but he was just playing overseas.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
okay.
You know, like the top league overseas. Because some of those Bellator fighters, like the guy that he lost to, Juan Archuleta, I mean, that was by decision. You know, he's, of his last 14 fights, I think he's finished 8 or 9 of them. I mean, he's been as dominant as it gets. But to your point, you know, when you're coming up, you have to fight on, like, regional shows to start with and really make a name for yourself. The guys that really have a breakthrough, usually it comes in the UFC by either being so dominant that you're just, like, destroying people, or you get on the Ultimate Fighter and work your way up there, or, you know, maybe Dana White on his it's Dana White looking for a fight. He goes around the world and he goes to shows and tries to find talent, and they do it like a documentary style reality show. And then they also now have, the last couple of years, going back to when I was there, Dana White's Contender Series. So, like, they go out, he has a bunch of scouts that go out and try to find all these fighters, and they invite them to the Contender Series. Well, when the Contender Series started, Patchy had already kind of been winning at some of the higher level shows. And when you sign with Bellator, I mean, Bellator for a long time was, they were attempting to compete with the UFC. So they had bought a lot of fighters. They had a lot of top tier guys. I mean, if you think about it, over the last couple of years, Michael Chandler, who they've been trying to set up with Michael or with Conor McGregor in a big high profile fight, he was like the king of Bellator. I mean, he was their champion over there. He's winning a lot over there. So what Patchy has done, I think it's just been a matter of time before he was going to get his chance over there. And his fiance, Tatiana Suarez, just fought for, I believe it was the strawweight title over there. She's phenomenal, a wrestling background. And that's a little bit more about Patchy. This is a guy that has a wrestling background, is a master on the mat. Like, if he gets you to the ground, it's game over. He has so many different submissions from so many different positions and angles. It's almost like there's a panic that sets in. He's one of those guys that when it goes to the ground, even the most decorated Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighters don't have a lot of answers for him. So, and he's so good on the feet too. Like, I think people are going to be really excited watching him in a couple weeks here.
Yes, June 7th, UFC 316, Patchy Mix, Angola/Buffalo. We're gonna go ahead and claim him and make him one of Buffalo's own. He's fought in this area before. 20-1. A good indicator that he's kind of new to the UFC scene, Matt, is if I type in UFC 316 on Google, everybody's got a headshot except him. He's got like that little blank icon. So I don't think that's gonna last very long. We'll wish him well. And UFC 316, June 7th. For Patchy Mix. So, reason to get excited. And, you know, throwing back, you mentioned Rashad Evans. That was a guy who fought out of what? It was from Niagara Falls? Was Rashad Evans from Niagara Falls? So, you know, watching, getting behind a local guy, like, whatever. It's a reason to kind of jump in.
Definitely. And right now, there is opportunity in the UFC. I mean, we're past the age of Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey and even Jon Jones, who's kind of been toying this super fight with Tom Aspinall. It seems like he's kind of more, you know, in the vibe that he's going to retire than fight a young up-and-comer. So it's really a new era, and there's so much opportunity for guys that come on and put on a show, go on a little bit of a winning streak. You know, Patchy, the other thing too about him is, like, when you get a chance to, he's kind of reserved. Like, if you were to go to one of his events or you know, he does a lot of local stuff here on the scene. He teaches classes, he does events. He's very unassuming, but, like, when you get him on the mic, like, he does have, like, a flair to him. So I think that if he comes out and he starts stopping people, the sky's the limit. I mean, they're looking for the next big superstar. And Patchy comes in as one of the most decorated submission fighters the UFC has seen in a long time.
Matt Perino on the Western Hotline. Little Patchy Mix, little UFC. From knockouts to hard knocks. That transition? Thank you. You know, training camp, we're a couple months away. We'll get to OTAs next week, Matt. You know, we've talked a couple times throughout the offseason, but here we are. I think we can kind of call it complete. And the next stage is, you know, what the Bills are going to do behind the scenes. And then it's going to be what they do in front of the cameras at St. John Fisher, in front of us, and in front of HBO. I don't know how you feel about it. I think most people that like, you know, to see a little behind the scenes, to see a little personality, what the Bills have to offer, are really excited about Hard Knocks. And I don't know, man. I feel personally like any sort of distraction talk. This is not a young team. This is not a dramatic team. My comparison is like if a Rex team got Hard Knocks, I'd be worried about a sideshow. But with the Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean team, I just don't think that's really a big concern.
You know, I asked the guy, Brandon and Sean about this at training camp last year, and John Scott actually put out the clip this week of them talking about it. It seemed like Bean was much more like, oh, gosh, don't give us Hard Knocks. And Sean maybe seemed a little bit more open to it. I agree with what most people have said. Is like there's a lot of control over what's actually going to get out. And they do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff already. So I think that there was like a level of familiarity with it. But I think what the cool thing is going to be is to kind of figure out, we know the big characters, right? Keon Coleman, Deion Dawkins, we know all those guys. I'm interested to kind of see who's going to come out of this show as like a household name on the other side. And to me, you know, Tre'Davious White in a lot of ways in NFL circles has kind of been forgotten about a lot, right? Like he went to the Rams, he went to Baltimore, he had the two injuries. Like we're very far removed from Trey White running on the field when the playbook sheets start blowing across and faking like he's reading it. Like he is a character. I think on that show, they can lean into people like that. There's going to be a lot of really cool stories. Plus it's like that could be a storyline that they're going to track. I mean, the one last gasp for Tre'Davious White to earn a role on this roster. I think it'll be a lot less distracting than even the Bills think that it will be. But listen, that's another layer to this thing. There's such a planning process that goes into place, like going on the road to training camp. Like it's not in your facility, so you have all those moving parts. Then now you have to add the extra layer of, okay, we're going to have a filming crew in here from start to finish at Fisher, couple preseason games. It's an extra layer, but I also think this comes in a season when I think the schedule makers were kind to them. So I think if they can kind of get past this early part of it, barring injury, they can get into the season and put that part of it behind them and focus on the season.
Have a prediction for what the storyline of camp will be. Now, not necessarily like the Hard Knocks version of it. You know, they'll track. I think Tre'Davious White is a great answer, by the way. Like, we're trying to figure out who they might make storylines of. Trey White is very interesting. So I like that answer. But not with regard to Hard Knocks. What do you think the story of camp is once we get there?
That's a great question. I think to me, it could be either Dalton Kincaid or Keon Coleman, and I think one of them can take the pressure off the other, depending on how they perform. Like if one of these guys is a camp darling, is a preseason performer, like they told you what they think of Keon Coleman by their approach at receiver this offseason, right? Like they drafted him at 33. They're expecting him to be a bona fide starter, somebody that they can rely upon. The guy that we saw in that Seattle game and that stretch of games for about 3 weeks is what they're hoping to see over the course of a 17-game schedule. And if he turns into that, I think that lessens the importance on Dalton Kincaid taking a huge step. Now, I think they want both of those things to happen? 100%. But if both of them struggle in the summer leading into the preseason, and, you know, again, you can get to week one and you could have, you know, so-so camps, and then you get to week one and Keon Coleman goes for 120 and two touchdowns, and it's in the rear view. But in terms of the summer and what we're talking about out there every single day, all eyes are going to be on those two guys.
Yeah. The offense with those two looking for something from them. Then you've got your newcomers in Elijah Moore and Josh Palmer. See how that plays out. And, of course, the new look to the front four, the defense that got its overhaul. The other thing about it that's interesting to me, Matt, is last year I felt like the Bills really leaned into people wonder if we can do this. The leadership void, they said goodbye to so many captains, not just Diggs, but Mitch Morse and Gabe Davis and Hayden Poyer. It was a big-time turnover year. And this year they're going to go to camp and they are favored in every game they play. You know, it's not exactly people saying the window's closing. They enter the season favorites in every game they play. So, you know, it'd be a interesting line for them to walk to keep that relative looseness while right back in the spot of favorites, right near the top again.
Well, you did them a favor in a lot of ways because they're going to be playing that clip from a couple weeks ago all summer long. And I think that they, as an organization, one thing we've learned over the years is they really thrive when they're doubted. like any kind of doubt, right? Like that's something that will play in meeting rooms, like those that wide receiver group, like whether or not that's the point you were trying to make, they take it as we're not good enough, right? We don't have enough around Josh Allen. We haven't created enough around Josh Allen. What are you going to do about it? And so I think that's a big piece of it. When you look at the long-term season outlook, right? I was listening to a clip. Chris Berman was on Part of My Take, and he was talking about this season, and he mentioned something that I had not thought about. But this is the first year in a long time, maybe ever, I don't know if there's been another team that could do this, where the Chiefs could go to the Super Bowl for four consecutive seasons. That's a record that the Bills have held forever. And one of the things he talked about was maybe this is the year where the Bills can avoid the Chiefs. Like, and I would play that as well. Like, is that something – is that the approach? Like, man, I just hope that you don't see them in the playoffs. Or is the approach, no, we're going to run through that team. And what would it feel like? We talked about this in the past on our podcast. It's like, what would a Super Bowl run look like if you don't have to end up going through the Chiefs? I think most fans would say, oh, who cares? Like,
right.
I just want to win a Super Bowl. But that has been the one obstacle you have not been able to leap past. And I think that this season – I know Rashee Rice is coming back, but he's coming back off of a serious injury. That offensive line does not look good. Chris Jones is a year older. I think this is the most beatable version of the Chiefs, and you have the Bills a year removed from ripping off a bunch of Band-Aids and now having their roster in a place, defensively especially, where there's so many options for improvement. And I think that a lot of things are lining up for them, and it's going to be to this season. To me, I get excited for every training camp and season. I love what I do, but I really think the energy around this group in particular, the way they've rebuilt the roster, I'm as high on this year's version of the Bills as any year that I've covered them.
One of my favorite questions to ask, Matt, is if I told you the Bills were going to be in the AFC Championship game and they're going to host it, and you get to pick the Chiefs or anyone else, who would you pick?
I would pick the Chiefs based on what I just said.
Because you think they're going to be they're going to be gettable, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that like Cincinnati's not going to be the 2024 Bengals this year. You can't bank on that happening. I think that they'll find a way, whether it's figuring things out with Trey Hendrickson, finding some answers on defense. That offense is just so explosive. And I think Baltimore is probably going to be better. I think that they found some pieces in the draft that are interesting, and they've obviously have their identity, unless Derrick Henry is ready to finally take his eventual step back. I still go with the Chiefs, especially at home. I know they lost a couple years at home, but there were some injuries that season on defense. There's so many factors that go into it at the end of the year, but I want to see the Bills Chiefs every playoffs. Like, And I think back to the days when I only looked at this as a fan, and I think that version of me watching football, I would have wanted the Chiefs too.
Yeah. I think the reward of beating them would feel incredible. The thing I don't want to confront is another offseason talking about losing the, you know, like the risk versus reward. Matt, thanks very much for the time, and have a great holiday weekend, buddy. Always a good always a pleasure to chat.
You too. Make sure you get a couple umbrellas in your car.
I know. A lot of baseball getting rained out this weekend. It's tough, you know.
I know you haven't hit the golf course as much as you like, but Memorial Day weekend, we got a baseball tournament, and we are looking at this weekend forecast, and I'm like, oh my gosh,
not
brutal.
Too good. I've just entered the jumps in as the occasional coach role in T-ball, so I'm not an official coach yet, but
all right.
I've started.
We'll have some side conversations.
Yeah, I've started
coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, started the gateway into that. Thanks, buddy.
Later, guys.
Matt Parrino of the Shout Podcast. You can, of course, and should subscribe to that and listen and follow. He and Ryan Talbot do great work, and follow him all over the place. And for, you know, the fight game stuff, too, that patchy mix. That's why I wanted to get Matt on to chat about it. So Matt Parrino, Syracuse.com, host of the Shout Podcast. All right, when we get back, his comment on Keon Coleman. I want to bring something up that we haven't yet. And with Coleman, you know, can he take a step? There's the breakdown. Matt Harmon, Reception Perception, who I consider, you know, really good, impartial evaluator of receivers. There's some good. there's some bad. We'll talk about exactly what Coleman can do and what we should maybe not expect him to do. Got some stuff on that for you coming up. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 here on WGR.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
They told you what they think of Keon Coleman by their approach at receiver this offseason. They drafted him at 33. They're expecting him to be a bona fide starter, somebody that they can rely upon. The guy that we saw in that Seattle game and that stretch of games for about 3 weeks is what they're hoping to see over the course of a 17-game schedule. If he turns into that, I think that lessens the importance on Dalton Kincaid taking a huge step.
Matt Parrino of the Shot Podcast. Chat a little Bills last segment. Wanted to talk Keon Coleman here for a minute because I think there's a good conversation to be had about him as we look to the Bills training camp and what we're going to watch for with Coleman. And if you have a thought on Coleman, give me a ring. 803-0550. Wide open phones right here for you. But I like to bring up reception perception, Matt Harmon. You know, good or bad, we bring up his profiles on players when they're going to think about being drafted and when they're on the team, all the way back to Diggs and Davis and Elijah Moore, his draft status. And I feel like Matt Harmon does a really good job just isolating receivers, what they do well, how they're used. And with Coleman, I'm going to say something. There's some bad in here, but there's also some good in here. And there's a key kind of point, key dividing line in the point. And what that is so when Matt Harmon does his rankings and when he does his breakdowns, you've probably seen, if you're on Twitter, you're anywhere, you see the route tree with the greens and the reds. And, you know, does this guy run this route well or is he bad at it? And if you were to see Keon Coleman's, what you would see is lots of red, which is bad. Lot of red. He's not very good at any route in the tree that the Bills had him running outside of slants and screens. Everything else was kind of bad. His percentile that he beat man coverage was very, very bad. Third percentile. Like Keon was not getting separation, was not getting open. And that was in the scouting report. And here's where the key like line comes down on. Well, what does that have to mean? And Harmon's one, as many other people in the draft thought, that thought Coleman would be better suited as a power slot. If you give him a little bit of a different job, he could really flourish. And the Bills didn't show much interest in doing that last year. And the way to kind of talk about this is to say, well, what would be the best thing for Keon Coleman? And what would be the best thing for the Bills? If the Bills, this kind of can get to Brandon Bean and about it's not fantasy football, we're not trying to get production, we're trying to win games. Like no one would dispute, you know, you want to win games, you want to have a good offense. And if you were just trying to give Keon Coleman the best opportunity he could get, it might be in a power slot kind of role. But if you're trying to build an offense that gives you a lot of things, well, Kincaid and Shakir are going to operate in the slot, and Elijah Moore might operate there in the middle of the field. He can go outside as well. So Coleman, as an ex-receiver, there are a lot of things he will never do well. But there are some things he can do exceedingly well. And one part of that, for me, is when the play breaks down. You know, I don't need him to be the go-ball guy. The Bills treated him like their deep go-ball guy a little too much last year, and that's probably not his strength. He's not going to get separation on those. Back shoulder, end zone fades, maybe stuff like that, above the rim kind of stuff, right? Some of his highlights were above the rim. And if I think back to training camp last year, highlights for Coleman in training camp, there were 1,000 highlights of him the spinning, jumping back of the end zone catch, whether it's in coverage or just alone. Like Coleman looks the part of an above the rim receiver. And I think if you have an expectation for him to be that kind of receiver, you won't necessarily come away disappointed. You don't have to be disappointed. He's probably never going to be the separator against man coverage that some other guys are. But again, can Joe Brady's offense work with that? And I think the answer to that is yes. He had some success, as Matt mentioned, that Seattle game. Before the injury, there's a couple broken plays. There's a couple of times he just beats a guy one-on-one. Tariq Woolen is the guy he beats in Seattle, makes a catch over top of him. So I just think with Coleman, the key is to keep your expectation on knowing what he does well and what he maybe doesn't do well. And while the Bills might have him in a position that doesn't get the most production out of him or doesn't get the best out of his skill set, the question is not that. It's does it fit as part of their offense? And if they make that work, then, you know, that's that. That'll be all right. But the numbers on Coleman from Matt Harmon, just to give you a comparison, like Gabe Davis's percentile beating man coverage topped out at 24th. He was 7th. He was 24th. Like, Gabe was never a guy that was getting open all that much against man coverage. And Coleman, well, let's just say he's got work to do to get to where Gabe was in that department. But that doesn't have to mean he is useless for you. It can, in fact, mean there are ways to use him better. And if they trust him a little more and he comes back and they like what they see, I think he can be a monster in the screen game. They love to run their screens, right? We know that. That's part of their offense. It's an extension of the run game to a degree. And Coleman after the catch, we're going to talk with Ian Harditz coming up at 9 o'clock. He pointed out, he pulled up the stat, number one in yards after catch over expected in the NFL at receiver last year was Coleman. That he made plays with the ball in his hands. So I think the Bills will give him a little bit more. The question I have is, do they kind of scheme stuff up for him the way they did Shakir last year? Because there's definitely some useful skills there. It's just a matter of understanding what he is and what he isn't and how that fits into their offense. So, you know, the Harmon evaluation had a lot of oof, but in there is, but how do the Bills make it work for them? Mike on a cell phone on Keon. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hey, I understand everything you're saying. To me, with all of his faults, the things that he doesn't do well, you can't give up. Take him in the first round or the first pick of the second round.
Yeah.
This is a guy that, you know, with all these things, that's what you see from a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick. He does this well. He does this well. Hopefully we can get him to do these other things well. This is a guy, we had opportunities last year to move up and get Thomas, to stay where we are and get Worthy. Guys that filled a hole in our lineup. What Keon Coleman does isn't much different than guys that we've gotten rid of. You know, it just seems to me that he's got almost like he's a power play specialist in hockey. He's going to be in there on the goal line because he can go up and get balls and he can make a couple plays. But the screen game, Shakir does the screen game. We got Samuel on the screen game. Yep. We got all these other guys. So we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole and make an offense that this guy can be effective in when that's what you get from a third or fourth round pick. You don't waste a first round or a first pick of the second round pick on a guy that has all these issues. You know, we talked last year before drafted, we need a guy that separates. We need a guy that can go deep. We need a guy that can stretch the defense, open up the rest of the game for everybody else. Yes, our offense was great last year. But what people never say is how much better it could have been had we drafted a Thomas or a Worthy and not had to trade for Cooper and that type of thing. So to me, I just hated the pick when it was made. After a year, I think it's shown that it was not a good pick because I just don't see him being an impact wide receiver for what we spent to get him.
Thanks, Mike. I mean, I think he can make an impact. Right. If your thought was in that spot, you get a future number one. I mean, the guys drafted around him, we'll see how it goes. Worthy, of course, was thought to be a role player, gadget guy. He got a lot of targets. Ladd McConkey went right after him. He had a big season. But Coleman was, the numbers were kind of there. He was putting them up until he got hurt, and it'll be a big second season for him. Yesterday, Judah Fortgang put together this, 200 route chart about separation, how they did on separation and how they produced. And Coleman was, it's outbreaking routes, one of the worst in the NFL at separation. But on actual production, how did he do with it? He was pretty good. So I guess you could make the case that's sustainable. I mean, Coleman wasn't my favorite idea when they made that pick, but I certainly think it can work. And again, it's just about knowing what he can do. Right now, his best spot, his best usage might kind of be blocked off. And that's where, as we get to, one of the big questions Bills fans will have this offseason will be like, Kincaid or Coleman? If you're going to pick one to hit their ceiling, who would it be? My pick to hit the ceiling would be Kincaid, because I think the ceiling for what he individually can do might be higher. Finding a way to use him, finding a way to get him the ball more, that might be one of the biggest jobs. And it's funny, like Matt Parrino there, previous segment, he said, they're going to use the doubting of the receiver as fuel. And that's fine. They can do that. They were more doubted at receiver a year ago than they are now. A year ago, they were in much worse shape. And, the point that a lot of us have been making about receivers that they should be investing picks instead of just, spending guys in free agency and, be a little bit more forward thinking about building a core and always having it there as opposed to turning it over a lot. So it's not that their receivers are bad. I don't think they have a great group, but they're in a better spot than they were last year. There's no doubt about that. I mean, last year, again, Matt Collins, who was, we didn't know what to expect, and MVS are the guys they're talking about out there. And now Josh Palmer is better than both those ideas. And Elijah Moore is better than any of the street guys they would have brought in to say maybe this guy can make it. So I think they're in a better spot than they were last year. And with Coleman, we're looking at year two versus year one. How big of a bump can there be from year one to year two for Coleman? I'm just keeping it in check. I guess that's what it comes down to. Like, if you're thinking, can he pop like Brian Thomas Jr.? I'm ready to be wrong on this. I don't even consider that a possibility. I'm hoping he can just be the guy, be Gabe, really. If he were to be Gabe, I would consider that a success. That'd be good. Gabe was good. That goes to your point. Gabe was a fourth rounder. He's a second rounder. I don't know how much I have to get hung up on that. I don't really have to care about that. Gabe was good. Gabe had his flaws. And when it came time, they didn't want to pay him $13 million a year. And if Coleman becomes the highest version of himself, I guess we could ask the question, would they pay him? Maybe, maybe not. It's a long way to get to that one. 803-0550. More of your phone calls on this. Jordan, if you can hang with us, we'll get to your call on the other side. Ian Harditz was someone to talk about this Bills offense and whether or not Coleman can be a contributor. Coleman, polarizing is one way to say it. I'm respecting those that think, and the Bills included here, that there's stuff he can bring without being a perfect prospect. I know there are lots of players that are like that. Shakir, to a degree, is this. Shakir's not some perfect receiver. They use him really well, exactly what he does really well. And if Coleman can kind of get that Shakir glow up where Joe Brady and the offense, they really start to lock in how they use him effectively, then I think we're all pretty happy with that. So I'm not asking him to be a do-all, does-all, because I don't think that's in the cards. But I think the potential is there to get more out of him, and that'll be one of the things on Joe Brady's to-do list this year. 803-0550. More of your phone calls. Ian Harditz, top of the hour, coming up here on WGR.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
How many songs are there about rain? Pool Stop the Rain, Blame It on the Rain. What else?
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain. Top rain-based songs. I think I see evidence of a sun existing. So I won't go any farther
Impossible.
Than that. Evidence of the sun still existing.
I don't believe it.
803-0550. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out on vacation. Owen's here. Josh is here. We'll get to Jordan in Fredonia. Hey, Jordan, good morning.
Hey, Jeremy, thoughts on Keon for you. So I'm one of those guys that's just always kind of trying to chase that 2020 offense that the Bills had. And to me, it was highlighted by four guys who could run the deep crosser like pretty well. I'm talking about like Beasley and Brown and Diggs and Davis. I'm surprised they're not using Keon more in that way. I go back to his combine results where he like really, really thrived. I think in the gauntlet drill, yep. And then kind of like everything else was like kind of struggled, like didn't run a great 40 time, like something like 4.6. I don't know, it was like three cone drill or anything like that. But,
yeah, but the gauntlet, he was the fastest.
Yeah, he was really, really good at that. I go back to like week three when he had that score against Jacksonville where it kind of like proves that point where it's like, okay, the guy isn't going to be, he's not that agile or that quick to separate like in these like short distance routes, but over time, like this guy can separate and use his size to make like himself like a valuable receiver. And you go back to the Seattle game too. I think to me, that's his best game as a pro. And it was against like a fairly decent corner in Tariq Woolen, like using his size. I mean, Josh was definitely looking for him that game. So like, I think Keon can be productive in this offense, but like, is he worthy of 120 targets a year, 100 catches, 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns? Probably not. But yeah. Can you get me 65 catches, 850 or so, maybe 6 or 7 touchdowns? Can you be a threat in the red zone? Like, that's kind of like all I really want him to be, and I think that's what he's capable of.
And that's kind of, thanks, Jordan, that's Gabe, right? Like, Gabe never got to 1,000, but Gabe was a contributor, and, I mean, before we all got mad at him for a couple of drops, we called him Big Play Gabe, Big Game Gabe. Yeah, I mean, that Seattle game, I'm watching every target, every catch in that game. He had 5 for 70 and a touchdown and caught one over top of Woolen, and there's a couple other plays down the field. You know, you're mentioning that touchdown against Jacksonville. The phrase we started to use for those was runway routes, which was a little bit like Gabe too, that there's not quick separation, but given the opportunity to build up some speed, there's something there. And my memory of training camp last year was watching Coleman catch two kinds of plays. One, the touchdown, spinny, jumpy one. And the other was those deep digs. They're running one against Pittsburgh in the preseason to try and get him the ball. If you remember the preseason, he hadn't had many catches in the Pittsburgh game. In the preseason, they ran him for one. And that might have been the play Trubisky hurt his knee on. I don't know. I might be mixing preseasons here. But that's definitely like, can you get the play to develop, get him running across the formation or whatever, across the field, and get a big play from him? There's something there. There's definitely something there. It's about, right, what can they get out of him and what can his ceiling be? You know, what you mentioned there to me was, like, that doesn't sound crazy. 800 yards, 60 targets. I don't know if that math does right, but whatever. He doesn't have to be their biggest volume guy. Good bet this year might be who'll have a bigger year, Coleman or Josh Palmer. They're both going to be on the outside, and one of them is, by career, better suited to play out there, and that's probably Palmer. 803-0550, but of course, Keon has like a certain skill set. I'm eager to see what they do for it in year two. Ian Harditz on this very question. He had an interesting note on Coleman about yards after catch over expectation. So get to Ian Harditz coming up, top of the hour of Fantasy Life. He'll join us, and more of your phone calls as well. 803-0550 here on WGR.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast, What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.